We've been hearing about the glories of the different devotees of Lord Chaitanya in Puri. So we heard about different leelas and pastimes of the Lord in Puri with his Puri Goswami, Paramananda Puri, and other devotees. We heard about Paramananda Puri's well. And then people that read these pastimes or hear these pastimes of the Lord, these interactions of God and his devotees, Bhagavan and his bhaktas, they may be curious, what is the background, what is the philosophy behind it, what is the meaning of it all? Is it just stories? Is it just entertainment? Is it just some friendship and exchanges of favors? And so now the author, he steps aside, Vrindavan Das Thakur, he steps aside to explain something about the philosophy, the backing. Just like everyone does something, people usually think and then they act. So there's thinking behind action, at least that's the rational man. The animal may not think, but the rational man, of course, thinks before he acts or speaks. My Gurudev, Srila Prabhupada, he would say that an intelligent man thinks twice before he speaks. Usually we fly off the handle, as they say, American slang. We say, oh! We just passionately respond to events and circumstances without thinking and often get ourselves in trouble by responding too quickly. In the World War II, the German officers that were running the German army, the war campaign, they had a very clever practice that they used when they were dealing with their soldiers in the battlefield. The soldiers often had, I've spoken this before, the soldiers would come to the commander or their lieutenant, and they would complain about another soldier or the conditions, the quality of the food or the medical assistance or some personal complaints with their in charge or some type of complaint or problem. Basically, we go to our authorities because of some problem. We want some amelioration of a problem or removal of a problem. So then the officers, they had this technique. They see this, they would listen very attentively and caringly. Caringly and attentively, they would listen to the complaints and suggestions of their officers. Then they would say, yes, yes, this is a very serious problem. This requires some thinking. I have to think about this. Please, you think it over and I'll think it over. And tomorrow we can meet again and discuss this. And what happened by that small pause in the flow of the action is that the complaining soldier, he would go home and then because they have a phrase in English, time heals all wounds. You cut your wound means a cut. You cut your hand, and then it may be a fairly deep cut. Some blood is there, and you put some betadine and some band-aids, and a week or two later, it's healed, and it's becoming all right. New skin is forming. So they use this principle, time heals all wounds. So the complaining soldier would go to sleep and wake up the next day, have a nice breakfast, and then he would think again, oh, maybe I don't need to go to the CO, the commanding officer, and that problem I had was not so significant, it was rather trivial, and it's already solved, and the person I was complaining about, he died yesterday in the battlefield. So I don't have to worry about him anymore. Or maybe the trouble and problem itself had found its own solution by the time factor. So this was, a premeditated plan of management which they used, which was basically employing the principle of sattva gun, patience. exercising or displaying the quality of patience is one of the attributes and manifestations of a sattvic man, of a sattvic mind, a mind and body fixed in the mode of goodness, fixed in a proper purified mood or mode of goodness by proper dietary habits, eating sattvic ahar and having sattvic achar and high meditative thoughts, creates a certain vibration, a wave of vibration, an inner peace, inner physical and mental peace, by which one can very effectively and efficiently deal with the permutations of material nature, what we commonly call the ups and downs of life. But generally, the modern society, people are extremely agitated and anxious because of the predominance of rajagun and tamagun, ignorance and passion. Anger is the stimulate, is the byproduct of ignorance, and lust and greed are the byproduct of passion, rajagun. So this is, now we're going to hear something about the backing of these pastimes. So it's a little philosophy. Ishvara se jane bhakta mahima bharate, hena prabhu na bhaje kritagna kono mate. Of course, this language is foreign to you and even more foreign to me. It's Bengali, which has many words that are similar to Hindi, but none of it is similar to English. But this was the vernacular of this time period and this particular Lord. Vrindavan Das Thakur says, only God, the Supreme Lord, Ishvara, he knows how to increase the glories of his devotees. Ishvara Jana, Bhakta Mahima Bhara. Bhara Mahima means the great glories of the devotees. This is a very curious point, because we are creatures of the material world and the modern paradigm, and we generally don't want to promote others. We don't want to glorify others. We want to promote our own cause and glorify ourselves. That's the general egoistic outlook in this age. But from the top, from the most supreme person, we see that God himself it takes great happiness in actually magnifying and glorifying the devotees of the Lord. You see in the case of the Mahabharata. The Mahabharata, there's the great devotees known as the Pandavas, the Panch Pandavas, Yudhisthira and Bhim and Arjun, Sahadev Nakul, and their wife Draupadi, and their mother Queen Kunti. The Lord made so many arrangements and had so many exchanges and did so many sevas for the Pandavas to amplify and broadcast and announce to the world the great glories of the Pandavas externally, but the great glories of devotees. He became their driver and their charioteer and their servant and their messenger and their protector and provider and advisor and everything. He washed the feet. Yudhisthira held a yajna here in Hastinapur. Maybe that's Meerut. And in that yajna, so many kings came there. And to enter the yajna shala, you can't wear your shoes. It's not a modern Delhi marriage, a modern Delhi social function where everyone wears their shoes, dead animal shoes or dead cow shoes or whatever they're wearing. It was a Vedic yajna home, Rajasuya yajna. And the Yama Niyam is that one must come there without any foot gear, even wooden sandals, karang, are not permitted. And before entering the yajna shala, one has to do achman and wash his feet. So Krishna, he was delegated, rather he accepted the very lowly service of taking care of the shoes, the royal golden slippers of the kings. When you go to Jayapur, Udaipur, and these places, you go to the palaces of the kings, the city palace in Udaipur of Jai Singh, and you see the royal coats and dresses and shoes that they wore, these typical Rajasthani shoes, little pointed like magic genie type shoes. They're pointed and they go like this. And they're all inset with diamonds and rubies and emeralds, and they're all gold lace and this and that. And really fancy. One pair of shoes cost 10 lakhs. Their shoes, their Viman is their shoes, not their Honda Civic. We drive, we walk around town in our Honda Civic or our Mercedes. That's how we walk around town, right? But they walked around town on their chariots and horses, and they wore their shoes, which cost 10 and 20 lakhs. Well, Balaji Venkateshwar, Vishnu deity in, was it Tamil Nadu? What's it called? Tirupati, yes, thank you. And Venkateshwar Hills, Tirumala Hills. And he's in Balaji, he's wearing crowns that cost 10 crores. One crown, one Shringar Mukut, I think you say Mukut? Mukut. It is 10 crores, all solid diamonds, instant gold. So people can spend a lot. So you see these shoes. Now when the kings came to the Rajasuya Yagya 5,000 years ago, this is the point I'm trying to explain to you, they had very, very costly shoes. When we go to the Hare Krishna temple, we're worrying about losing our 5,000 rupee rebucks or pumas, you know, because, gee, these cost 5,000, these are my track shoes. So now Krishna, at this Rajasuya sacrifice, he went to this extent to serve his devotees, which shows you the glories of the Pandavas, that Krishna became the shoe boy for the exalted, expensive shoes of the kings, so they wouldn't suffer the fate of the prime minister. So he was taking their shoes and washing their feet. So what Krishna wouldn't do to glorify his devotees? So here we find in these pastimes of Lord Chaitanya and Paramananda Puri and the other ones that Lord Chaitanya, he knows how to glorify his devotees, and rather he loves to do it or to act that way. It's explained that Vrindavan Das Thakur said that he was so effusive. Gauranga Mahaprabhu was so effusive and eloquent in describing the mahima, bhakta mahima of his devotees, and he was so loquacious, speaking so many beautiful, continuously speaking, it appeared that Lord Chaitanya was glorifying his devotees with five panchamukh. We have panchamukh Hanuman, panchamukh Shiv. So he was speaking, oh, he's like this, and he's like that, and he's like this and like that. Just speaking so much wonderful glories, excessively. So this is the nature of God and his devotees. And then he says, goes on, only the Supreme Lord knows how to increase the glories of his devotees. Therefore, only an ungrateful person fails to worship God. Bhakta raksha lagi prabhu kare avatar niravadi bhakta songe karina bihar. Bhagavan incarnates, he descends to this world to protect his devotees. Bhakta raksha lagi avatar. He always enjoys pastimes with his devotees. Bhakta Sange Karina Bihar. Bhakta Sangha Bihar. Enjoy. We enjoy with our friends. We enjoy. Friends means lovers of a particular type. Sakiras, friendship, loving friendship. And we enjoy with our mother and father. Parental love. Motherly love. And we enjoy with our conjugal mates. Husbands and wives. This also, basically one enjoys with those that love him. And one enjoys with those that he loves or she loves. So God enjoys Bihar with his devotees because they love him and he loves his devotees. Akartavya kare nija sevaka rakite tarashakshi wali wade sugriva nimite. For the sake of his devotees, Bhagavan performs activities that may be considered improper. Sevak Rakite, Nija Sevaks. So Akatar says here, Kartavya, Kare, Karta. Karta means to do, and Akarta means to do wrong. For his devotees, his own devotees. So it didn't seem quite proper for Ramachandra to hide behind the coconut trees and shoot Bali, the commander, the chief of the monkeys, in the back. When he was fighting Sugriv, is that correct? This is Ramayana. This is immoral. It's against the Kshatriya Dharma. There's Brahman Dharma, Kshatriya Dharma, Baniya or Vaishya Dharma, and Shudra Dharma. And there's Ashram Dharma and Varna Dharma. Ashram Brahmachari Dharma, Grihastha Dharma. You say Dharm. No A. Dharm. Grihastha Dharma, Sannyasi and Vanaprastha Dharma. Do's and don'ts. Lakshana, Gun, qualities, characteristics. So this is a no-no, what Lord Ramachandra did. But why did he do it? Because it was love for Sugriv. Because Sugriva was helping him retrieve his kidnapped spouse, Sita Devi. So it seems improper in the eyes of mundane morality or mundane chivalry, codes of chivalry or fighting. But as they say, the king can do no wrong. This is a British phrase. The king can do no wrong because he's an autocrat. The king is an autocrat. He is completely swatantra, independent. He is the king because of his power, his organizational abilities, and his power. If he makes the law, he who makes the law can also break the law. He makes the law, he's above the law. The king makes the law in his kingdom. If anyone steals in my kingdom, their hands get cut off. And then he attacks another kingdom and steals somebody's queen. It happens. So he attacks another kingdom and steals their queens. And then he comes back to his kingdom. So then the judges and Brahmins, ministers should say, oh, king, you've stolen. You stole this queen or this princess from another kingdom. We should cut your hands off. No one can do that. No one can challenge the king. No one can override the king. Otherwise, if they can, then they're the king. So by his might, so God is the king of all kings, as it says in the Gita, the Bible. He's a Ishwar. There's so many Ishwars, but he's a Parameshwar. So, oh, this is immoral. Ramchandra's immoral. How he could do this? No, he can. He created Bali, and he created, besides that, he didn't kill anything. He just changed his body. Bali had a monkey's body, but he was lusty and greedy, and that's not very good, no matter who you are, what body you're in. To be lusty and greedy, no matter what body you have, is a deficit. So then this body, you're not performing. You as an Atma, you as a Jiva Atma, are not performing very well your activities in this world, Bali. You're becoming too lusty and greedy and overtaking other people's property. You're taking more than your quota. You're violating the godly law and principle of Ishvasya Madam Sarvam Yat Kachit Jagat Yam Jagat. You're not understanding that everything and everyone in this world is actually owned and controlled by me, God. And I give you, and you should accept what is your quota. Eat to live, don't live to eat. You follow? Live to eat. We eat something to maintain body and soul together. Not more, not less. A yogi doesn't eat too much nor eat too less. Eat too little. He doesn't sleep too much or sleep too little. So most people in the modern world, they don't eat to live, they live to eat. Ah, food, more food. Punjabi, Gujarati, Italian, French, American, sandwich, pizza, this, that. Oh, tonight I want this, I want chips, I want taco, I want Mexican, I want Chinese, I want Vietnamese. Chasing everywhere, all over this restaurant, that restaurant. This is less than animal life. Sevakera dasya prabhu kare nijanande ajaya chaitanya singha jine bhakta brinde. Gauranga, the Lord Gauranga serves his servants in his own ecstasy. Sevak dasya. Nij anand. It's his bliss. It's very interesting. If you understand the nature of existential reality, there's Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchitananda Vigraha. God is the supreme transcendental entity, and everyone else is his part and parcel. Everyone else has their origin in God. They're maintained by God, and they're part of God. Mameyiv amsho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatanaha. They're amsha, Bhagavan ka amsha. This is told in Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 15, verse 7, Mamevamsho. So he's understanding that, the Lord understands these are all my parts and parcels, And he's actually blissful. He's actually happy to serve his family. A husband, a father, or a husband, he has a family. He says, this is my family. They have a mailbox outside the house. It says, the Agarwal family, or the Gupta's residence, Gupta Bhavan, whatever they say. So the father, he said, he's the proud father of a family of five or six or whatever. His wife and his three or four or five, whatever children. And so he feels that these are my dependents and these are my part and parcels. These are my children, my son, my daughter, my mother, my father, my wife. And he works very hard and he helps them emotionally and physically and financially and economically and in every possible way he can. And actually, by doing all this seva and service to his dependents and to his parts and parcels, which are his family members, his parivar, he feels happiness. He happily does it. We can serve out of fear, we can serve out of duty, or we can serve out of love. So generally, in the proper situation, in the highest, most pleasing form of service is to serve out of love. Seva, prem seva. Bhagavan, Radha Krishna, prem seva. Bhav seva. So if a husband's mood or attitude is, oh, I have to go to work and I have to feed these useless people. I have to maintain this useless wife and that's only doing your dharma, as they say. I'm doing my dharma. I'm doing my duty. I'm fulfilling my obligations. Are you blissfully doing it? No. Do you want to do it? No. But I have to do it. So that can be there. That often is there. But God is not a player like that. God is the abode of love. And he expands himself, he expands his very self to create more loving particles. He loves to be loved and he loves to give love. Sevakara dasya prabhu karinija. The Lord serves his servants in his own ecstasy. The devotees conquer the unconquerable lion-like Lord Chaitanya. Ajay Chaitanya Singha Jine Bhaktivrinda. Chaitanya Singha, he's like a lion. No one can conquer God. Lord Chaitanya is God. But the Bhakta Brinda, the group of devotees, they're able to actually conquer the Lord. Love conquers all, as you know. They have a phrase, love above power, mercy above justice. Right? So the greatest force in the world is love. What would someone rather have? Would someone like to have influence, prestige, money, fame? Or would they rather have a wonderful, affectionate, loving relationship with a man or woman of this world? Obviously, a sane man or a sane person would forego the wealth and pomp and prestige for the loving relationship with another human being. Love is life. As we often say, life without love is not worth living. So this love is so powerful that no one's more powerful than God. God is the supreme powerful. Ishvara Parama, Parama Ishvara. Paramishvara Bhagavan Sri Krishna ki jai. But he's the supremely powerful. He defeats the most ferocious demons and monsters in every age, whether it's Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, or Ravana, or Kans, or Agasura, Putana, whomever they are, he defeats them with a time factor or with his bare hands or feet or his weapons or his chakra. But then a little gopi comes along. Oh, Krishna. A little gopi takes the bow of her eyebrows, the danu. Danu bru. This is bru. Bru means eyebrow. Bhru in Sanskrit. Bru. And danu, as you know, means bow. So she pulls back the bow of her eyebrows. And there's one arrow called her pupil or eye. Boing! Krishna's, oh, this gopi has conquered me. Krishna, just one, ay Krishna. One Vrajavadu, one newly married gopi simply peeks through the foliage, peeking through the nikunjas, the kunjas on the sides of the path as Krishna returns from cowherding pastimes, Uttara Goshta Lila, and she's looking through, and then Krishna feels that someone is looking at him. Even we, with our mundane senses and our ridiculously mundane bodies, we can understand, we can sense it. A man or woman can sense that somebody's staring at me, especially women, because men usually stare at women, as men well know and as women well know. Anyway, I was just trying to say that how people get conquered by love, a glance here and there. Bhaktagana sange prabhu samudrera tire sarvavaikuntari not kirtane bihare. The Lord of the Vaikunthas, Vaikunthanath, and all other planets enjoyed his kirtan pastimes with the devotees on the shore of the ocean. To say Sarva Vaikuntha Adinath, this is another way of saying Lord Chaitanya. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the golden avatar of divine love, he spent 24 years of his, let's say 18 years of his life living in Jagannath Puri in the Bay of Bengal, regularly visiting the Jagannath temple and dancing and chanting Hare Krishna and Nam Kirtan with his devotees. So you can call him Krishna, you can call him Gokulananda, you can call him all these different names of God, Krishna Sahasranam, Gopal Sahasranam, Vishnu Sahasranam, Ram Sahasranam, Chaitanya Sahasranam, all these different thousand names of different forms of Bhagavan you can use to address Lord Chaitanya, because he is a Sarva Avatari. He is the source of all the other incarnations. So here the author is using his poetic expertise and his bhav to extol and to glorify the Lord by saying he's Sarva Vaikuntha. Of all the Vaikuntha planets, he is the Adinath. Because as you know, each Vaikuntha planet has a particular Lord there. There are 24 primary forms of Vishnu. And these Vaikuntha planets, except all the way to Goloka Vrindavan, which is a crown of all Vaikuntha. The crown of all the Vaikuntha planets is Goloka Vrindavan. And there, in that planet, in the inner core of that planet, Goloka Vrindavan, or in Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna has two arms. Damodar, Vamshidhar, Muralidhar. But when you expand from the center of Goloka, which is the topmost planet in the spiritual world, the Paravyom, then you come to Dwarka and Mathura. In Dwarka and Mathura, Krishna has four arms. Dwarkadish has four arms. Devaki Nandan has four arms. And then from there out, all the way out, through all the thousands and unlimited millions, Ananta Brahmanda, Ananta Dham, Ananta Haridham, there are millions of Vaikuntha planets, and all of those Vishnu forms have four arms. 24 of those Vishnu forms have their four symbols, which indicate their power and their position as Vishnu. Shankh, Gada, Padma, Chakra, they have them, there's four hands, and they have them in different places. One has a conch in his upper right hand, the other has a conch in his lower left hand, and actually there's so many thousands of combinations you can have. You have four hands and four different objects, right? Chakra, Gada, Padma, Shankh. So 24 listed there, and those 24 forms of Vishnu are named Govinda, Damodar, Vishnu, Sridhar, Madhusudana, Padmanabha, Trivikram, Rishikesh, Keshava, Vasudev, etc. And these are of these 24, 13 of these Vishnus, we invoke their presence. We invoke Avahan. We invite them, Avahan, and invoke their presence on our body, because our body is a Vishnu Mandir. Paramatma Vishnu lives in the heart, and as a kavacha is a protective measure for the body of the devotee. It's called mantra kavacha. Vasa karilena prabhu samudra tire viharena prabhu bhakti ananda sagar. Gauranga made his residence on the shore of the ocean, Samudra Tire, like we say, Jumuna Tire, Vanachari. And he enjoyed the ecstatic ocean of devotional service, Bhakti Anand Sagar. So, of course, there's a play on, let's say, the author, the kavi, the padakavi or the padakarta, who's writing this Bengali poetry, glorifying the Lord's charitra and shiksha, lila. He's making a, I forget what it's called, but there is an ocean there, and the ocean is full of waves. And, of course, people usually go in the ocean. They enjoy playing in the waves and swimming there and having fun in the water. Whether you're old or young, people usually enjoy being in water because we are water, after all. 75% of our nature is water. The whole body, we're watery. Although we think we're very solid. You think I'm very solid. I'm 70 kilos solid. Or maybe I'm too solid. Maybe I'm 80 kilos solid. More solid than I want to be. But actually, all that solid that we, mass that we talk about, 75% is water. Is that right? There are some doctors in the audience confirming my findings. So that means if 75% of our physical body is water, that means that we're mostly watery bodies, yes? So as we are mostly watery bodies, but appearing somewhat physical and human-like in external form, not fluid and shapeless, and so we go higher to higher and higher planets, they don't have watery bodies, and the watery bodies with the little earth, they have mental bodies. Their bodies are made of mind. They have no water or earth. We have 25% earth and 75% water, yes? Yes. And then as you go to Kinaras and Kimpurushas, then their bodies are more and more air, and they become air bodies, and then the ethereal bodies. Then you have Manasadeha, Buddha and Pretas, they have Manasadeha. Their bodies are made of mind. But sometimes that mental body, there's some ether there. There's some calm. Above Vayu is calm, K-H-A-M, ether. So therefore, sometimes people can see a ghost because they materialize on that level of the ether. It's another topic. But here, this analogy is that the Lord is on the side of the ocean. But he's not, in this particular comparison, said he's enjoying the ecstatic ocean of bhakti. He's looking at the waves. Bhakti also is called bhakti taranga, bhakti tarangani, the waves of devotion, the waves of joy, the waves of thrill and ecstasy that one experiences in a newer and newer relationship. When one first falls in love or maybe even gets married, the primacy of the relationship and the newness of it create, there's always new ways we have to relate this way, that way, and the cooking and the speaking and the laughter and so many intimacies and movements and exchanges and travels, and we get to know each other, and if we're very fortunate, we have a very compatible and loving spouse or partner, and then at least the initial few months and years maybe quite thrilling and exciting. And after that, it gets a little bit mundane and hackneyed and same old, same old. But Krishna is not like that. He's Navayovanam. Navayovanam. He's eternally youthful and ever dynamic and ever changing and ever fresh because he's God. He's not limited like us. He avatari sindhu kritartha haite ateva lakshmi jani milena taha haite. Since the ocean attained perfection during this incarnation of the Lord, therefore Lakshmi appeared from its waters. Mahaprabhu was to come in the future to the shore of the ocean, Nilachala. Lakshmi Devi took birth as a daughter of the ocean. There's some stories in the Purana that these various personalities, one should not be confused. Krishna's various parishads are eternally existing in Vaikuntha, in Dwarka, in Ayodhya, in Goloka Vrindavan. But from time to time, from different kalpas, they appear, they have some leela, or they engage in some pastime here in the earthly realm, which they show the pastime of appearing. But it can't, it's not analogous, or it can't be compared to our birth. We appear for some time, then we disappear and take another body. When it says Lakshmi appeared from the ocean, that makes it sound like, well, I appeared from my mother in New Delhi as a Punjabi baby. So Lakshmi has a beginning and end. She appeared, which means she has a birth. Where was she before she appeared? That means she didn't exist. Where was this body before your soul entered it? It did not exist. It is a newly formed body of 24 years old or whatever it is. The soul is ever existing. So one may get confused. Oh, the appearance of Lakshmi Devi. Radharani appeared in Ral, or Radharani appeared in Barsana from a lotus flower, or Krishna appeared in Gokul, or Vasudev Krishna appeared in the prison house in Mathura. Oh, so God has a birth like me. So before he appeared in the prison house, I guess he didn't exist. No, this is Avajanati Mahamudha Manasham Tanamashritam. That Lakshmi Devi is eternally the Nitya Parishad, an eternal consort of Lord Narayan or Lord Vishnu. But there is some pastime in the Kheer Samudra Manthan. I think that's the name of the Leela. Kheer Samudra Manthan. When the Devas and the Asur, they were churning the ocean of milk. And while they were churning that ocean of milk was Vasuki, and using Mandara Mountain as a churning rod. I guess that was the first mixie that was ever designed. You know, mixie, a blender mixie, some blades inside and a motor, make your mango shakes. Now it's the season for mango shakes, for those lovers of mango shakes. And so the blades was the Mandara Mountain. And then they had a rope. It's almost like churning yogurt into butter. There's some stick, and it has some ropes around it with some handles. And you put the stick inside a mudka, and there's some little design like this. The stick on the bottom is like this, like blades. Just like you have blades in your blender. And then by hand, you go like this, and then the stick is in the ropes and twists around. Ta 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 ta. It's very hard work, actually. So Mother Yashoda, she was hard working. The churning that fresh makan for Makanchur Krishna. She worked so hard to make fresh butter and yogurt. And this little rascal, he would run away to somebody else's house and steal their butter and yogurt. I mean, what is this? The mother works very hard in the kitchen making nice prasad, dinner, etc. The son comes home and says, oh, I already ate. I ate at my friend's house. Then the husband comes home and says, oh, I stopped on the way home and I ate in the restaurant. So what will the wife feel like? So he's there, and so they churned this ocean of milk, and first thing that came out was vish, poison, kalahuta poison, and whatever, some contract was there or whatever. Whatever was produced from that ocean, either the demons or the devotees would take it. That was the spoils of war, it was a joint venture. India-America joint venture, demons and devotees, pulling on this huge snake rope, which was an improvised rope, and churning this huge pot of milk, which was an ocean-sized pot, Kheer Samudra. And so they first came out poison, but someone had to take it, and the demon said, no, thanks, I don't have any appetite for poison today. And then the devotee said, we don't drink any of that Johnny Walker stuff. And so then they called in Lord Shiva, and they said, can you help us out? Because it's either our call or their call, and someone has to take it. So out of his munificence, Lord Shiva said, I'll take it. And he drank it, and he became known as Nilakant Shankar Bhagavan Ki Jai. Blue throat. And then they went on to churn the ocean. They produced one elephant with four tusks, very specialized elephant. And his name was Airavata. And as soon as he came out, then Indra said, oh, he's mine. Indra took Airavata. And this way, different things came out. Then Lakshmi came out. And Vishnu said, hey, wait a minute, she's mine. So then he took Lakshmi Devi. So this is what's being alluded to here. That is very nice, because Lord Chaitanya, he is that Vishnu. And the ocean in Puri attained perfection because Vishnu, coming as Lord Chaitanya, was living there. And that's why Lakshmi appeared from the water of the ocean, because Lakshmi is the eternal consort of Vishnu. So Lakshmi, of course, appeared in Gaur Leela, and her name was, what's the first one? First wife? Lakshmi Priya. Lakshmi Priya is actually Lakshmi Devi. She is Bhu and Sri potencies combined. Nilachala Vasira Jay Kichu Papuhai Ateva Sindhu Snane Savajayakshai. The sins committed by the residents of Jagannath Puri are therefore nullified simply by taking bath in the ocean. This is the power of the ocean. It's also a tirtha. It's tirtha snan, to bathe in Ganga snan. Even there's a place where the Ganga enters the Bay of Bengal. It's called Ganga Sagar. Ganga Sagar Tirtha. And every year on Sankranti in January 14th or so, there's a huge mela there, like Kumbh Mela. And everyone, maybe it's just after Makar Mas or Mag Mas. Anyway, it's around January. And thousands of people go there to bathe at that confluence where the Ganga meets with the Samudra, the ocean. So this Lord Chaitanya is saying, because Lakshmi appeared from the ocean, because Lord Chaitanya, Vishnu himself, the original Adi Vishnu, the Sarvaikuntha Adi Nath, Gauranga, he bathed there regularly. Every day he would bathe there. It has become Pavitram. It has become Pavitram Stan, and an actual Tirtha, where one can go and get free from his sins simply by bathing there. Ateva Ganga Devi Vegavati Haya Se Bhage Sindhu Maje Milila Asya. Therefore, because of the ocean's good fortune, Ganga Devi swiftly flows to merge with its waters. So he's saying Ganga Devi, she's the most fortunate personality and very purifying herself, because she's Vishnu's Charanamrita, the Charanamrita of Vamanadeva, who entered this world and appeared as Ganga Devi, appearing as Ganga Devi. And she's very happy. Good people like to meet with good people. Bad people like to meet with bad people. So Ganga Devi is also Pavitram, and so is Samudra, is Pavitram, purifying. So she's very happy to flow into the ocean, and they meet together exactly at the place I was speaking about, Ganga Sagar. It's just southeast of Calcutta. Hena Mate Sindhu Tire Sri Krishna Chaitanya Vaisena Sakala Mate Sindhu Kari Dhanya. In this way, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made the ocean glorious by residing on its shore. Actually, wherever devotees reside, this of course is Bhagavan. A yogi became glorious because of why? Because Lord Ramachandra lived there. Mathura became glorious, why? Because Bhagavan Sri Krishna was born there. Vrindavan became glorious. Why? Because it's the pastime place, Leela Stan, Leela Bhumi Vrindavan. Krishna and his Parishads had so many sweet Madhurya Leelas there. Dwarka became famous. Why? Because Dwarkadish lived there. And in this way, all these various places become Tirthas, because the Lord and his devotees have activities there. They either live there or they come there for some function. Kurukshetra from time immemorial is known as Dharmakshetra. Kurukshetra, Dharmakshetra, Samaveta Syutsavaha. That even in Satyuga, the demigods are coming there to do yajna. It's an extremely purifying place. Kurukshetra. As you know, it's a few hours, I sit north of here, no? 4 hours. So Krishna, battle of Kurukshetra was held there, the Mahabharata, Pandavas and Kauravas. And just by dying there, because it's a religious place, just by dying there, they got promotion, what to speak of, following the Kshatriya Dharma. So now, even where devotees live, that place becomes fortunate. It says in the Bhagavatam, wherever a pure devotee moves or stays, it becomes a tirtha, it becomes a holy place. His feet, there's one it's explained, very interesting statement in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, in the Uddhava Gita. It says that the devotee wants to walk with the Lord. The devotee wants to walk behind the Lord and follow in his footsteps. But the Lord, Krishna, Bhagavan, he's so much attracted to his devotees that he wants to walk behind the devotees. And because wherever the devotee moves and lives, then God lives and moves with him. So he's, as a devotee moves from place to place, God is moving and walking behind him. And as God's walking, the wind is blowing the particles, the dust particles, and the dust particles from his feet are being blown forward in front of the feet of his devotee. So wherever his devotee puts his feet becomes purified, because the devotee's feet are sprinkled with the foot dust of the Lord, who is walking right behind him. So when you meet a devotee, you're actually meeting the Lord. And one purport in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada explains that when the disciple meets with the spiritual master, a sangha, sadhu sangha, or guru sangha, he should understand that he's meeting face to face with the Paramatma. It's a pretty interesting, lofty position and statement. That's what's told. Whether or not that's realized or understood, that's another point. But this is the point. This is the statement of our acharyas and the Bhagavat itself. Because this verse I was explaining comes right after a verse where Krishna is speaking to Uddhava Mahashaya. Uddhava Mahashaya was a great associate and friend of Lord Sri Krishna. And he lives eternally in Dwarka with the Lord. And he was in Mathura with the Lord. He was sent to Vrindavan with a letter and news to give to the grieving gopis in separation from Krishna. And it's called Brahmar Gita, chapter 46 and 47 of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam describe Uddhava's visit to Vrindavan and the letter that he spoke to the gopis, how Krishna was feeling very apologetic and very sorry to the Braja gopis, especially Radharani, for leaving them so abruptly and in such a sad situation. And he was explaining to them that he could never, napariyeham, niravadi. He said, I can never repay you for the service and love and affection that you all showed me during my 11 years in Vrindavan. He says, I am eternally indebted to you. I have an eternal debt to you, my beloved gopis. And this is Bhagavan's nature. He's indebted to his devotees, his pure devotees. And the pure devotees always remain forever indebted to the Lord, grateful and indebted. Not only to the Lord, but the devotee is indebted to his guru also. So in this particular section, it's saying that the Lord made the ocean glorious by residing on its shore. So wherever a devotee resides, he also makes that glorious. He makes that place glorious, and he purifies the entire universe, or the entire world, wherever he walks, because Vishnu is walking with him, Vishnu is in his heart. Prabhupada says in one place that as long as the pure devotees are on the planet Earth, then there's auspiciousness and good fortune for the Earth. But in the absence of pure devotees, it's all darkness everywhere. So what's keeping and holding Kali at bay, so to speak, or restraining the impact or the full force of Kali Yuga, is the presence of so many wonderful bhaktas and devotees in this planet. Ram bhaktas, Krishna bhaktas, and Vishnu bhaktas, etc. They're doing an immense contribution to create peace, and that's why India is somewhat favored, although historically people may, if you measure India against the Malecha and Yavana cultures outside of India, then one might think that previously India was somewhat backward, at least in the modern 20th century. But that's, of course, a gross misunderstanding of the actual situation. But the fact is that in the Himalayas, even today, there's not only great personalities and yogis living there in the inaccessible regions of the Himalayas. I don't know how many of you have actually seen the Himalayas, but if you fly over the Himalayas mountains coming from Europe, or you're coming from even Nepal, you'll see how vast and how big they are. If you drive in a car to Badrinath or Gangotri, Yamunotri, you don't really have any idea. You drive around and around and around and around and go up and down hills and get up there 3,000 meters or whatever. But you can't get the visual understanding or the mental appreciation of how vast and huge the Himalayas are until you go by air. When you're in an airplane, or a jet, let's say, and you're flying where they fly up there, and you look out the window, you're going anywhere, Australia, Singapore, sometimes you're flying above cloud banks. There's a bank of clouds below you. You go through it in your bumpy ride, fasten your seatbelt, then you come above the clouds. And look out the window and see all these cotton balls, like huge mattresses everywhere. You feel like you want to jump out of the plane and land on the cotton clouds and just relax in a bed, cotton, you know, bed, isn't it? I mean, feels like that to me. And it goes, and you look out the window, it goes on and on as far as you can see out of that tiny window, but it goes on forever. When you fly over the Himalayas on a clear day, you can see that the Himalayan mountain chain separating Tibet and India and Nepal, whatever those countries are north of here, the same way it looks. When I first went there sometime, I was looking out the window. I thought it was clouds. It initially has that same impact. Has anyone seen? It looks like layers of, this must be layers of clouds, which I've seen going across America or Canada or Europe, whatever. And I asked the steward, I said, is that clouds? She said, that's the Himalayas. I said, it's so vast. It goes on and on, like waves and waves and waves of mountains. Like in the ocean, there's a wave, and behind it's a wave. You see it like this. So in those I'm explaining to you in a very graphic way, or at least attempting to, that there's so many inaccessible regions in the Himalayas. It isn't that you can just go up in your little four-wheel SUV, or whatever they call it, you know, your four-wheel drive Frontier, and discover all the locales and kutirs and caves of all the greatest rishis. So these great rishis and sages are living there in Bharatvarsh, in the Himalayas. And not only that, even incarnations of God are living there. Narayan rishis. That's Arjuna. It's an expansion of Narayan, Sri Krishna, and Arjuna. Great rishis. Their pastimes and teachings are described in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And they're also staying there. Why? They're doing tapasya, they're doing meditation, they're doing prayers for the benefit of the people of India, for the protection and the welfare and the dharmic and the upliftment. So the problem is that there's not enough of them. They're praying, there's a handful of them, and there's more and more demons and Gnostics and Pashandis appearing in India every day. So they're upsetting the balance. There's more bad people. India is becoming overrun with bad people, thieves and terrorists and liars and cheaters everywhere. So it's upsetting things. But the very presence and the fact that these great sages and incarnations are living here, they're creating some very great auspiciousness for the land of India. And you and I and everyone who lives here are benefiting because of their presence, whether we know it or perceive it or not. So in the same way, Lord Krishna Chaitanya made the ocean glorious by residing on its shore. So the presence of these great personalities and the presence of devotees, we have so many temples and ashrams and monasteries in India, they're actually making the land of India glorious. India became so glorious because of the transcendental presence of God and His devotees that worldwide, at one time, India gained the world fame as being the land of religion. Have you ever heard that? You've heard that? And that, because that stems from a Shastric statement that Bharatvarsh is called Dharma Bhumi. Dharma Bhumi, and the Mlechadesh, Yavanadesh is known as Pap Bhumi, the land of sin. It says in the Bhagavatam and also in Skanda Puran, the deserts are the places where Brahman killers, Brahman Hatya, those that kill Brahmins take birth in the desert. Ye samaye ishvara aile nilachale takane prataparuda nahika utkale. When Lord Gauranga came to Nilachala, which is Jagannath Puri, means the bluish, the very dark mountains there at one time, bluish type tinge. The king of the region, the Gajapati Maharaj Prataparudra of Orissa, he was not there at the time. He was out of station on a military campaign trying to conquer a fellow country, a nearby country. Yudharase gyachena vijayanagare ateva prabhuna dekila simhari. The Gajapati had gone south to Vijayanagar on a military campaign. Therefore, he did not see Mahaprabhu at the time when he was first there. Thakur takya katadina nilachale puna goradeshya ilena kutuhale. After spending some days in Nilachala, Gauranga returned in great happiness to Navadvip Dham. Okay, Ganga Prati Maha Anuraga Badhaya Ati Shigra Godadeshi Aila Chalila. Says that Gauranga, feeling increased attachment for the Ganga, the Lord quickly returned to Godadesh. Then it says, Sarvabhama Brata Vidya Vachaspati Nam Shanta Danta Dharmashila Mahabhagyavan. There was one personality when Lord Chaitanya first went to Puri and he had his first darshan of Lord Jagannath. He ran into the temple in ecstasy, seeing Lord Jagannath as non-different from Shyamasundar, Brajendra Nandan, Sri Krishna. And that bhav and that preem bhav, oh my Krishna, oh Sham. And he ran to embrace the Lord, then he fainted. And then Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya, who was a great acharya and guru, quite elderly, maybe 70 years old at the time, Lord Chaitanya was 24. He understood these are some sattvic vikars, some transformation of a great siddha saint or siddha mahatma. So he ordered the guards to carry him to his home. And Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya nursed him and cared for him and brought him back to external consciousness. And they became fast friends. And ultimately, Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya became converted from the Gyan Marg to the Bhakti Marg. Lord Chaitanya converted him, or let's say upgraded his ticket, from Gyan Marg to Bhakti Marg. And he explained to Lord Chaitanya that he had a brother named Vidya Vachaspati. And these are some of the qualities the author is describing. What is the qualities? Like someone might say, oh, do you know Mr. Gupta? And they say, no, what does he do? Oh, he does this and that. And what's he like? Oh, he's like this and like that. So the person will describe another person by where he lives, what is his occupation, what are his achievements, what are his qualities, what is his contribution, and what is his position. So the author is doing the same thing. He's Shanta, Danta, Dharmashila, and Mahabhagyavan. He is Shant, peaceful, Danta, forgiving, pious, Dharmashila. He's an abode of Dharma. And Mahabhagyavan, he's greatly fortunate. So it says, Sarva Parishara Sange Sri Gora Sundar Achambite Asi Uttarila Tanragara. Mahaprabhu suddenly came to Vidyanagar with a full party. Sarva Parishad, all of his associates were with him. Vidya Vachaspati, this is this Brahmin, he offered obeisances, falling flat before the Lord. He fell on the ground like a stick. Hena se ananda hoila viprera sharire ki viri karibataha kichui naspure. That Brahmana, Vidya Vachaspati, felt blissful. He was so happy, he didn't know what to do. He was overwhelmed with joy to meet Lord Chaitanya. Prabhu Tanhari Karilena Alingana Prabhu Bali Shuna Kichu Amaravachan. Gauranga immediately embraced that Brahmin. Of course, Gauranga's name, his birth name is Vishwambar. Nimai Pandit, Vishwambar Mishra. So he's also a Brahmin by birth, Lord Chaitanya. So he's embracing this other Brahmin. He said, Shunye Vachan, listen to my words. Now Lord Chaitanya spoke. Chitta mora hayeche matura yaite kato dina ganga snan karimu etate. I have a desire to go to Mathura. I will stay here for a few days and take bath in the Ganga. Nibrite amore ekantani divastan jena katao dina muni karon ganga snan. Please, Vidya Vachaspati, I'm visiting your place. Give me a nibritagar, a very quiet, peaceful, lonely room, so that I can stay here and bathe in the Ganga. Tabi sheshi mora maturaya chalaiva jadi more chahaya avashya kariba. Then, my dear Brahmin, you can make arrangements so that I can go to Mathura. If you have affection for me, then you must do this for me. Shunya Prabhur, Vakya Vidyavachaspati, Nagilena Kahite Haya, Namra Mati. On hearing Lord Gauranga's words, that Brahmin Vidyavachaspati replied humbly, Viprabali, Bhagya Sabha Vamshera Amar, Yatai Charana Duli Aila Tumar. It is the good fortune of my entire family that the dust from your lotus feet has blessed our house. Charana Duli. That's the Brahmin, his foot dust is very powerful, because in those days, Lord Chaitanya was a sannyasi, he was walking everywhere barefoot, no shoes. So the dust from the feet of the great devotees is very purifying. And the culture was such that the people were so educated, they were educated to the value. Everyone was educated to the value and position of God. And everyone was educated to the value and position and of the Brahmins. And they were very valuable in society, and they contributed teachings and exemplary behavior and beneficial teachings to guide humanity to a higher standard of joy and fulfillment. Because Brahmins were Brahmins, but nowadays Brahmins are just like everyone else. Their behavior is questionable, if not abominable, and their teachings are absent. And they're simply speaking to make money, not to guide and instruct and to elevate and purify. They're not guiding and instructing and elevating and purifying people by their satsang and their shiksha. It's a business. It's called the Bhagavat business. Bhagavat Saptaha. So this isn't exactly the idea that Vidyavachaspati, he was a real Brahmin. He was really engaged and he was so pleased that he knew how to behave. So we'll continue the story of Lord Chaitanya meeting Vidyavachaspati tomorrow. And he's so thrilled and happy. My entire family is blessed. You've come to our house. Your foot dust is sprinkled in our house. And Grihasthas really don't understand, because they're living in their domiciles with their family and relatives and friends and associates. They don't know what, from their they don't know what a sannyasi. The sannyasi, his experience when he lives in the ashram with brahmacharis, then he stays with grihasthas, how much different it is. The sannyasi can feel so much different, the vibration. And that's why they don't want to ever stay in a grihasthas house, because it's such a uncongenial vibration for meditation and sadhana bhajan. But out of their compassion, then the sannyasis, time to time, they stay in people's homes. They prefer to live under the trees or in some ashram somewhere. So now this grihastha, Vidyavachaspati, the sannyasi Thakur, this mendicant, this paribrajak sannyasi is wandering around, and this Kinchan Sadhu is coming to my house to bless me. How appreciative he is and how grateful he is. He's falling over backwards to serve him. So if someone has devotees of the Lord regularly visiting his home, he is truly a Mahabhagyavan and Dharmashila. He is a Dharmashila. He's an abode of piety and Dharma and extremely fortunate. So this place that we're sitting in right now, is many devotees come here and visit and give you their darshan and their kripa. So you are all very fortunate souls also. So we'll close today's discussion on that point.